Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 29th of October, 2019. On the podcast today, Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ, talks about their updated JORC resource for their zinc lead silver project in Spain. Also on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about i3 Energy, Bidstack. In fact, this was just before Bidstack released their new addition to their advisory committee. This guy, Brian, who's ex vice president of EA, which is very impressive. But we talk about Bidstack, Europa Metals, EUZ, Bluefield Solar Income Fund, and Metrobank. We have an argument over Metrobank. I just wonder if he's still holding the stock. He is, and we argue again about Metrobank. Also on the podcast, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, if you receive an RNS via our app, which is free to download, and you like the contents of that, give it a thumbs up, and it could feature on this podcast, and the front page at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Lawrence Reed, Executive Director of Europa Metals, EUZ is ticker there. Lawrence, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Justin. Hi.
Now, you've released a very significant bit of news today, an updated JORC resource, and I think you say it is the most significant development for the Taral project to date. So, big bit of news. We'll dig into that. If people are listening and they don't know what the Taral project is, just explain what Europe is about, if you could, Lawrence.
Certainly, you've got a significant lead, zinc, silver resource in Spain. Politically stable, great infrastructure. Look at lead, zinc, silver prices and forecasts at the moment. And you've got a project that's been progressed using very little money, taking historic drill holes, a lot of historic data, and cost effectively into schedule. Getting an indicated resource for the first time today. And pushing that total resource out even further. And it's looking very, very positive as a comparatively low capex, economically robust mine in a politically stable region near metals markets and a lead zinc smelters.
Yeah, well, take us into some of the figures, the update. Take us into the highlights, if you could.
No, certainly. So essentially what we've done, Justin, is update the resource and not just expand the existing total resource, but we've also got first indicated category of resource. So just going through the numbers, quickly, we've increased the actual metal in the ground. So a 30% increase in contained zinc in the ground, 12% increase in contained tons of lead, an 8% increase in ounces of silver. So independently audited, if you like, by a resource category, we've grown how much metal is in the ground. We've grown the entire resource, but also excitingly, we've got a first indicated resource, which is a sort of higher level of resource categorization. That's important when you start wanting to move your project into pre-feasibility study and bankable feasibility study, or feasibility study as most people call it. And we've managed to get 2.7 million tons at 8.9% zinc equivalent. And that's really quite exciting, because that's a big component about going forward towards a PFS. Why is a PFS important? Well, what it does is it takes those initial economics of could Terroll be a mine, and the mine concept of the scoping study, and it gives a lot more surety, bringing in indicated resource, bringing in engineering work and also metallurgy, so that you're able to demonstrate, yes, to our investment community, but also to third parties and to the lead zinc market off-takers and also operating groups, that this is a real project. This is a real project, and the inputs are solid.
Yeah, well, take us through some of the figures here on the CapEx, and hopefully, you know, the amount of production you're hoping to get out of this.
No, certainly. Well, from a scoping study, we've said, well, we haven't said it was independently done by MS, but 33 million of CapEx for 450,000 tonnes per annum design, with $25 per tonne OPEX costs. That's over 15 years as a 4% cutoff. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to take those. That's a nice mine with good average grade, if you're having a look at what we're pulling out of the ground at the moment in terms of drilling. That's a nice mine concentrating on these high-grade areas we've talked before, Justin. So a sort of high-grade corridor underground. But what we're going to be doing now is we're going to be taking this indicated, and also we're going to be targeting new areas within the existing inferred resource area, and have a look at defining those numbers, and also to see if we can make some improvements here and there. But possibly even more excitingly, lots of the work this today's JORC update's not just about the recent drilling we've done, Justin. It's about a whole load of work programs that we've been doing sort of quietly in the background over about a year. And they've all been brought together, and today's the day we've announced them. So the numbers are great, and we're really happy with the numbers. We're also really happy with lots of the information that we've now managed to process into new targets, both inside the resource but also outside, because we do think there's strong possibilities of expanding the resource in addition to what we already have. Now, we may not do it. We've got to be very careful with our cash. But there's no doubt in my mind that Terroll's a much bigger project than the 80 million tons that you see today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see. And so, you know, let's look forward a second. Say, next 3 to 6 months, what are you hoping to achieve there?
Certainly. Well, what we're going to be hoping to achieve is going to be getting the metallurgical test results back from Wardell Armstrong. So that will give us an idea of concentrate products. And that's a really key bit, which we've gone on about again and again, about building in what product, what concentrate products are you actually going to be producing from Terroll. So zinc, lead, silver, as separate concentrate products possibly, but also going back to that scoping study, Justin, going back to the OPEX number, having a look at the flow sheet about whether there's places where we can optimize and tighten up the costs in the flow sheet to go towards the PFS. We're also going to be generating new drilling targets as well, initially within the resource area. So having a look at some of the new areas with the information 3rd with the new information we've got to be able to develop that indicated resource out. We're also going to be having a look, as I've already said, at potential targets outside of the resource zone. And also we're going to be starting geotechnical work and hydrogeological. So we've announced before, this work is very much the engineering component of Tyrrell. And what it does is it does two things. One, it helps us firm up that scoping study concept of a mine into a mine plan at PFS level. But it also allows us to complete key elements if we want to make a development application next year to Junta of Castilla y León to get the license development license process going on Tyrrell to turn this into a mine.
Yeah. And at the moment, I mean, at what level? I mean, I assume you said before you're always talking to, you know, third parties and interested parties here. And I assume you put this to them already or not?
Sorry, Justin, which particular bit are you talking about?
The updated JORC resource here, I mean, are you sharing that already with interested parties?
No, absolutely not. It's just come out this morning. So one of the things I've been doing before we came on this call is sending out the data packages. Obviously, this announcement's gone out through to LME Week or gone out during LME Week, and there's the LME Base Metals event this evening. So yes, no, we're going to be out there talking to people. We're already pushing it out there. But when that metallurgical work comes through, that'll be the key part of the package to glue together into this new JORC update with indicated. And over time, it will allow us to move towards getting the engineering components put together. But certainly this news today is very important, very noteworthy, I think, for companies wishing to grow their zinc portfolio, wishing to look at new projects to credibly develop into production. I still think the results of the Wardle Armstrong testing are going to be extremely important. That's in a sense the third leg of the stool. What are you going to produce? How much will it cost? Just initially ideas on what product quality are you going to have as well. That's going to be very important. But certainly I think today's news, we're going to be shoving it out there.
Yeah. And that metallurgical test work, you're hoping to deliver that way this quarter, is that right?
That's correct. Correct.
That's quite soon.
That's right. So we're in conversation with Wardle Armstrong fairly continuously. You know, it's not just a process where they sit in the dark and then come up with a sheet of paper. With all of our consultants, we're talking to them. We're discussing ideas. And that's interesting in terms of today's news because, Justin, I want to say we made a big decision on how we got to this JORC update with AMS. And, you know, I think there's two ways to look at JORC updates. There's, if you like, there's mining the stock market. So getting the same old model, which never changes, where you just try and get an increase or a grade increase every single time, but you don't actually bring in subsurface conditions, new data, new information. All you're trying to do is just try and make that resource bigger. And in a sense, that's quite a safe thing to do as you go along. But when it actually comes, in my view, down the road to actually selling it or doing it or developing it, well, suddenly you're left with something which perhaps needs a whole new load of work on it. What we did instead is, in discussion with AMS, is actually say, well, let's take, and it was a bit of a gamble, let's take all of the information we have, all of the knowledge we have, and reinterpret the entire model. And, you know, that's pretty scary because what you're doing is you say, right, we're going to make a decision. We actually want to see what Tyrrell looks like subsurface. Mm-hmm. So we're going to take the risk almost of creating a new model or enhancing the existing model with all these new data sets. And, you know, you never know what you're going to quite get out of that. And it's an enormous relief and a testament to the team at AMS and also our belief in the Tyrrell project that what we've got substantially exceeds our expectations. coming out of this process. So I just thought it was worth talking to that, Justin, because what we've done today, the type of resource we've got today, it's not just a number. It's not just a set of numbers with a set of percents. Yes, we stick that in the highlights, but this announcement, and you'll see it's quite lengthy, it's quite long. This JORC update, this announcement, it's not just for investors who are very important to us, but it's bigger than that. It's about doing proper work which can actually be used to credibly move Tyrrell forward. But it was a bit of a gamble, and it's paid off.
Marvellous stuff. Okay. Well, Lawrence, I can hear the relief and the happiness in your voice there. A significant step you've achieved here. So for people listening, like the sound of the story, but are not yet following it, give them those three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please, Lawrence.
We just delivered a significant increase in our lead, zinc, silver resource in a politically stable part of the world, where frankly a lot of regions around the world are becoming increasingly more difficult. We've done it on not very much money whatsoever since we took over this project. Go and look at lead, zinc, silver forecasts for the next couple of years. I think if you're a private investor, that would be really interesting. And we've got much more news to come.
Marvellous stuff. Lawrence, good to chat to you. And like you say, more news to come, so no doubt we'll be catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Brilliant. Cheers, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al?
Justin, fine, thanks, mate. And obviously a glorious weekend of rugby to celebrate. Best performance I've ever seen from England, and the All Blacks played pretty well too, but we were fantastic. And just a shame it wasn't an England-Wales final, but there we go.
I know. I was at a friend's house on the road who's South African, and it was quite annoying because it wasn't a good game. It was very scrappy, and I just thought none of them performed really well. You know, just a scrappy game, you know, and it just finished all the way through at the start. So, oh, this is going to carry on like this. 3 points in it each way, but at the end, 19-16 was so annoying. It would have been nice to have an all Northern Hemisphere final, never done before. And it would have been fair play to England, you know, phenomenal play. It really just went for it, you know, and didn't let up on the gas.
I have never seen them play that well. They were incredible. I mean, literally, the whistle went, and all of a sudden, the All Blacks were just hit by this this wall of activity, and they were just so determined. And of course, if they can carry that intensity into the final, then you know it's looking pretty good. But wow, what a game!
It's funny. Do you see Owen Farrell at the start when they're doing the haka? He almost smiled with a knowing look in his eyes and saying, "Yeah, you wait. You've got to wait to what's coming to you. We will hit you hard and fast." And he did. It's almost like he knew the plan, you know, and the plan played out.
Well, it's a weird thing because I was talking to a friend over the weekend, and we were saying, you know, how the haka in a sense gives the All Blacks an unfair advantage because they can psychologically sort of dazzle their opponents prior to the game. But I think now when they meet teams, I mean, England just formed that V, didn't they? So they just kind of sort of come on, yeah, let's have you, let's be having you. And of course, it could almost be working against them now. You could argue. So you know,
the England may get fined for that. One or two players may get fined for that disrupting the haka. And I think, well, hang on a sec. Why are they allowed to do an intimidating dance, but no other team allowed to sort of do it back to them? I don't understand that, you know?
No, I know. It's one of those weird rules in rugby. And, okay, it's tradition in New Zealand. I get all that. And it's important that we retain it. It's a kind of – it's heritage, it's history, all of that. But, you know, I think a team should be able to respond in kind. And that's what England did. And, that's the end result. But at the end of the day, the All Blacks were comprehensively outplayed by us. You know, we were superb, really, really good. So, yeah, exciting stuff.
Marvellous. Let's get on to things more important now that, you know, to me.
Well, more exciting stuff. I mean, i3 Energy is the first company I want to talk about. I mean, finally, after 3 years of plugging away literally and developing, the company raised $7.5 million in July 17. They had the Liberator Field, which is adjacent to the Blake Field, and also later, later acquired the Serenity Field, which was close by. And the great thing is that as they've gone through, they've raised money at various phases. But Baker Hughes, the operating company who were awarded the initial contracts, they've taken their money in shares and warrants. The warrants vest at 56p, and obviously we had the drilling result from Liberator a few months back, which disappointed the market because basically they didn't hit anything. But what they did was acquire a load more data off the back of that, and as a result of that, they've redefined and remapped the Liberator field. So the Phase One field, which was targeting sort of 63 million barrels of oil via four wells, the company now expects to recover some 23 million barrels of oil, which is still a lot of oil, you know, regardless, you know, compared to where the company valuation is currently. So Liberator is ongoing. There is now an updated seismic map on the website. So for geologists there, you can go and understand the complexities of the geology in the Liberator field. But this morning, the company successfully announced it successfully drilled the Serenity well on its oil prospect, and the well results from that are in line with i3 Energy's earlier pre-drill estimates of 197 million barrels of oil. That's stock tank oil initially in place. Stop acronym which is industry terminology, within the company's license area. So straight away, you know, it's transformative from i3 Energy. The share price was trading at about 26-27p, which is about a market cap of about 25 million. Jumped up to 40 million this morning, but which it's still really a drop in the ocean, excuse the pun, compared to really where the value of this company lies now. The company was excited about the Serenity prospect anyway, because again, it was adjacent to another existing discovery. That's a Repsol giant Spanish oil company, Tain discovery. And the reservoir, the oil in that reservoir, the quality of the oil is expected to be equivalent to the Tain discovery. So this is incredibly exciting stuff. It's validated the company's work over the past 3 years, and clearly now with contractors happy to take shares in lieu of cash, the company is funded to continue the drilling activities into next year. So transformative for the company. Very excited for the company, and I'm sure we're going to hear a lot more from CEO Majid Shafiq and the board over the coming days.
Yeah, and you know, it's good for people. I'm going to sneeze. Coughing and sneezing all night. Hang on a sec.
Oh, bless you.
I think patience is starting to pay off here, because it's been a roller coaster here. The share price up, down. In fact, one of the people have held by mistake, really, is my father. He bought a while back when I bought, a long time back, but he didn't sell any. And yep. He held on, so hopefully he'll be rewarded with that. But there's lots of holders as well that have been holding for a long time here. But yeah, hopefully we'll see a re-rate. And it's always good for the AIM market. Like I said, there's a lot of traders there, so it just provides more liquidity. When you have a decent few winners in the market, it doesn't take a lot. You know, people share it around a bit, and it helps the entire market, you know.
It does indeed. It does indeed. And also, you know, we have the naysayers and the doomsayers about AIM, saying it's a casino. And I think, you know, we've seen, well, the companies we're going to talk about today really have provided validation as to the real value of this marketplace, and where companies can come and raise money, but get exposed to a huge investor audience that want to get involved, that are proactive, as well as having the connections to be able to discuss and discuss ideas and spread content. It's an exciting place to be. And i3, I think, you know, as you say, it's been a long and rocky road. And I got in initially and had a good buy on the stock initially, and then I was holding. And then after what happened previously, I decided to get out and just sit on the sidelines and see what happens. And I've now gone back in this morning, happy with the story, happy with the management. You know, I do see this is going to go all the way. And, you know, broker Canaccord's got a price target of 190p. They may well revise that in light of the results today. So exciting times for i3, anyway. Good news.
Cool. What's next? Anything else, Al?
Yeah, well, on the theme of companies that are giving AIM a good reputation, talking about Bidstack very briefly. Obviously, we've discussed Bidstack on many occasions. You've spoken with James Draper, the CEO. This is, of course, a revolutionary technology company that has put together a it's put together a platform that can deliver and distribute live advertising for online gaming. This is the gaming environment. So when the big advertising agencies such as DoubleClick and start to distribute their content, when they go to their client, they can say, well, we're going to allocate several million here to radio, several million here to TV, several million here to online, and now that we've got this new sector, which is gaming. So it's huge. It's created a new dimension to global advertising for the major brands. So again, Bidstack's gone through a lot of valuation, a lot of validation process, but it's also attracted the interest and attention of some major players. We've had the company set up an advisory committee and brought in members from Spotify, Trade Desk, and the former Grapeshot and Chief Technology Officer and Oracle VP Derek Wise joined the board early this year. So you've got a bunch of global big hitters in this industry that have got involved because they just see huge potential. And the last set of results, James Draper, I think, very adeptly discussed the investment proposition, where the company were in the validation process. He said they're extremely happy with the developments in the company, with the step by step validation that the company has taken, providing advertisers and the agencies with the platform so they can go and set their own tracking mechanisms. So absolute validation from an industry standpoint as well, which is very important. And then on Monday this week, James Draper and Francesco Parisi decided to sell some shares. They said in the announcement that they had funded the company for the first few years, and now they were taking some money back out. And of course, there was a bit of a drop in the Bidstack share price, although it's trading back around 18p now. But I just want to sort of put this in context. I mean, James Draper at the time had 17% of the company. He sold a few hundred thousand shares. He's still got 16.5% of the company, so he's got 44 million shares. Francesco Parisi, ditto, had just on 11%. He's now got 10.3%. So these guys have just sold down to raise some money and to provide themselves with some cash flow. They're still massively invested. And, you know, we've spoken about skin in the game. By any standard, the CEO owning 16.4% of the company is skin in the game. So, I just wanted to raise that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? People are saying, I mean, the timing of it, people are questioning. You know, like I said, this Q4 when news is going to be coming out, they just questioned why they're doing it now. I have no idea. I just think, you know, it's. I think we're selling like this. It's a personal decision completely. You know, it's up to them if they need to do something with the money, they need to do it. It's, you know, it's like anything else. Everyone in life has stuff they have to do with money. So anyway, you got a big chunk tied up like that in shares, and they've, like I said, they've held that. They've had money in the company and invested time and money in the company for years now.
Yeah.
And you know, they've just, as I said, it's a tiny percentage of what they still hold. I don't think it's not a red flag or anything. People said, oh, well, that were. People started panicking on anything, didn't they? So, yeah, listen, I just think, like I said, hopefully we'll have some news coming out, then we get this revenue generation. I know yesterday on LinkedIn, let me just look it up. I said, James did say they've just hooked into Trade Desk, I think. Let me just look at this. Yep. So they're starting to activate on Trade Desk, their inventory. So that will be generating revenue. Let me just see what he said here. Our Bidstack group in-game inventory now live on campaigns are being served across Europe via the Trade Desk, integrating gaming inventory into one of the world's largest global digital advertising tech platforms. Another important step forward for us, and it's just the start. Yeah, so now that's going to be sort of, you know, monetizing that inventory. So, like I said, we are gearing up towards revenue generation. Obviously, we've take a while to see that, but we, you know, what's happened here, right? The potential is huge. The share price has risen on that potential. Now, What needs to happen now is the financials need to catch up to that potential, or they need to meet in the middle somewhere. Yeah. That's all it is. It's risen quickly. It has to come back and consolidate a little bit. But once it does that, it'll start going again. But all we need to see is that kind of revenue generation, the fundamentals to catch up with that potential or meet it halfway in the middle. And then the share price will consolidate and move up again. But, it's a glimpse, an insight into the potential, future potentials. That's all it is. I think there's a lot of excitement. Got ahead of itself a little bit, the share price maybe. But now it'll consolidate. And I have faith in the guys longer term, you know. Mid to long term, it's going to do well, I think.
I think the thing is, you know, a lot of investors were questioning the disconnect between the actual results, the revenue declared in the results, and the forecast that the company were making. And when you've attracted people of the caliber of Derek Wise and the reputation of Derek Wise, you know, these people are going to want to get involved in what the company has to say and the statements it makes to the market, because their reputation is on the line. So clearly there is every expectation, as you say, you know, with James's statement yesterday, the company is already the company's dovetailed the BizTag platform into the agency and is starting to generate money. So I would imagine at the next trading statement that that disconnect will start to be reconnected as the revenues start to catch up with the forecasts. So yeah, I just go back to my point, you know, people panicking about the share side. Well, really, you know, James still has 16.5% of the company. So, you know, he raised a bit of money. You know, you have to do that along the way sometimes.
Yeah, marvellous. What's next? Anything else?
Yeah, well, another AIM validation. This is a company that a lot of investors have sort of hold, and it's been up and down like a horse draws. Perhaps I'll rephrase that. It's been up and down, sort of
like a yo-yo.
Like a yo-yo. That's the one. That's the one.
Attached to her drawers.
Attached to her drawers. That's even bouncier. Yeah. Oh dear. Don't get me started. Okay. So Europa Metals, EUZ. Obviously a company run by Lawrence Reed and Miles Campion. The Europa Metals it owns the Torrel lead and zinc project in Spain. And there was a hiccup about a year ago when the company declared some numbers
There weren't any numbers in it.
Well, there were no numbers. There were no numbers, and shock horror, the share price collapsed like a pack of cards, and everyone was left wondering. But since that time, the company has been steadily rebuilding. It's been working on scoping out the total resource, and today we've got yet further validation. The company now has put out an official JORC estimate for the the Torrel project. The total resources increased by 12% to 80 million tons of the combined minerals under the ground. We have the zinc estimate has been increased by 30% to 830 million tons. The lead estimate being increased by 12% to 570 million tons, and silver has been increased by 8% to 40 million ounces. So, you know, by any standards, again, you know, that's a JORC estimate. That's the benchmark by which all small mining companies are judged, and that's a big step forward by Europa Metals by any stretch of the imagination. I won't get too much into detail because I know you, Lawrence has appeared on the podcast too and has discussed in greater detail, but I think that's a great step forward for them. And once again, you know, validation, good company, good management. You stick with the story all the way through. Try to ignore the short-term noise and the short-term ups and downs. And the company is doing its work in the background. And here we have a company that's delivered, and it's actually beaten its own expectations with an increased resource. So well done to Europa Metals. Great, great news. Well done.
More stuff. Anything else?
Yeah. Just a change of tack. We have spoken about this on several occasions over the past year, but again, you know, looking at for an income option, a steady growth option in difficult markets. Bluefield Solar Income Fund, BSIF is the EPIC code. Now, Bluefield Solar Income Fund invest in a portfolio of solar energy assets across the UK, but it's focused primarily on utility scale assets. long life energy infrastructure, which is generating stable revenue and stable energy output with a minimum of a 25-year asset life. So it's long-term investment. You know, it's not exciting explosive stuff by any stretch of the imagination. But since we've spoken about the BSIF, we were speaking about it when the share price was trading at 120. We've had a nice, slow, steady gain in the chart this year. Companies, the funds currently trading at 132.5p, has a dividend yield of just under 15.8%. The net asset value is 114p, so it's trading ahead of that because the, you know, the fund is has been very successful. It's been trading for a number of years. It's a steady earner. You know, it's somewhere safe to put your money. You're not going to see spectacular growth, but actually, in this current day and age, when investors are looking for income, looking to retain the capital that they have, this is something that I think is well worth a look.
Yeah, okay, cool stuff. I'm just looking at, are you still in Metro?
I am still in Metro, yes I am, yes.
What's your
yes.
thoughts?
Well, I'm of the same view. I mean, the bank is undervalued, as we spoke about last week. Yes, it's paying. It's the profits are going to be hit by the coupon payments that the bank is making. But it is its retail business is continuing apace. The model is working.
Why do you say it's working?
Well, it's working because the new board are continuing to invest and to develop and to open new branches. They've opened up two new
businesses. They said that's under question, didn't they? They said that's under question. That thing is going to be questionable now, isn't it?
No, they're reviewing all the activities going forward, and they're reviewing cost-cutting activities. But at the end of it, they have a loan book. The funds coming into the bank increased during the time when the bank was undergoing the crisis with the uncertainty as to whether it would be able to raise the money through the bond or not, and it is still a work in progress, and there is always the possibility, of course, that Vernon Hill could come back in. Yeah, that's right. Deposits grew by $500 million to $42 billion. Yeah,
but in the last month, it went outflow of $213 million in September.
$230 million. But that's still, deposits still grew.
But so that happens again. No, that's the most current month, though. We have. That's data on the most current month. It was outflow.
Yeah, and that's because there was the uncertainty over whether it would get the bond away. It did get the bond away, so one would assume now that it won't necessarily be reversed, but the outflow should stop. Also, you know, during that period, customer account growth of 106,000.
Over that. That's cost them lots of money.
Well, it's let me say,
but one thing people are ignoring, I mean, people who are long, I mean, so listen, we all have confirmation bias when we own stocks. We all are biased a little bit, right? But one thing people tend to be ignoring is that their outlook shows that their customer accounts will go down, deposits will go down, their margin will go down. So we're going to see a weaker Q4 here than we've had in Q3. Q3 is going to be quite strong compared to Q4. So, it's a deteriorating business, and that's not going to get any better next year. And they've said that in the outlook. Why are people ignoring that Q4 is going to be worse than Q3? So what are you hoping that happens here, that'll see the share price rise?
Well, look, you've got Sir Michael Snyder who's coming as chairman. Michael Torpy is coming.
What are you hoping that'll happen now?
They've steadied the ship. They've steadied the ship.
Deteriorating?
That they've had to pay a lot of money to refinance business, and that will continue to hit profits going forward. But their tier one capital ratio is 16.5%.
I know you don't earn money off that, though. You've got to have that. That's the problem with our bank sector is it's highly regulated after the financial crash.
Yep.
And people have said, in fact, you know, challenger banks can't work because the regulations are set too high for them they're too challenging for them to challenge the high street big four. So you can't earn money off your capital ratio. That's dead money just sitting there. You've got to have that. They won't go through. Fair enough. But doesn't mean their assets won't go down. They'll be losing money. So the thing is, as a business, it's going to be losing money. It's deteriorating. The business itself, operation, is deteriorating. They're questioning their actual, you know, what they're doing at the moment, their expansion plans. Everything's under question. And so the only thing I see,
expect a new chairman and board to do, to be honest.
Yeah, but they're also under FCA investigation, and is a fine going to happen, some people are saying. I don't know how big the fine will be. But so you've got that hanging over his head.
It'll be a slap on the wrist and no more.
You don't know that. You don't know that, do you? So we don't know. We have no idea what they're thinking. They may say, right, listen, we can't have this going on. Let's make an example of them, a challenger bank. So first of all, the only positive I can see here is if one of the shorters buys the stock up and cuts their short, that's a positive for the share price. That could happen, couldn't it? But I mean, again, we don't know if that's going to happen, you know?
No, we don't know if it's going to happen, for sure. But at the end of the day, the FCA are anxious to encourage challenger banks into the market. They want to shake up the torpor in the banking system at the moment that exists. And it exists partly because of the regulations. So the FCA are keen to see these banks succeed. And I don't believe... Yeah, okay, the accounting error was discovered. The companies paid the price. The founder, the emeritus, Vernon Hill, the driving force with his Yorkshire Terrier, he stepped down. So he's stepped to one side. He may come back in and take the bank
again, private. You're all saying may. All these mays and hopes and things. I had an argument or discussion on this guy, again, went personal on Twitter. And I thought, when you get personal, you've lost. And I think, I said in the video, they're dealing with professionals. The guys who short these companies do it for a living. They've done their calculations, and I guarantee they've probably done 10 times as much research as most private investors have on Twitter. And so, because, I mean, if you look at all the other big companies that they've shorted, Thomas Cook is one, Debenhams is another, and Metro Bank's another. These guys know their stuff. They do their homework because they lose millions otherwise, you know? And so, the argument I've got is that there's lots of mays and hopes, and that's why people are investing. Like, the shorts may cover their shorts, Vernon Hill may come in, this may happen. What I'm looking at is what the bank is telling you, that Q4 will get worse operationally. They're questioning their whole growth strategy. That's in black and white in their RNS. I'm not talking about hopes and mays. Only what may happen. The investors on Twitter are investing on hopes and may happens. I'm talking about what they've said in their report.
Yeah. After what's happened, you expect the new management team to shake up and review every aspect. And I think you can read into what's been said. You can read both ways. But here are the facts. We know the FCA is anxious to encourage challenger banks into the space. And being a challenger bank, you've got to offer better interest rates, and you've got to make yourself more attractive than the big four. So that's what Metro Bank are doing. Going forward, they are cutting costs. There's a new chairman in place who has a reputation to uphold himself. So he's going to want to go through everything with a fine tooth comb. Everything that the bank puts out of the market has got to be gone through. And at the end of it, the bank is trading at just under 0.3% of book value. So yes, it is low. There are risks with this. We know that, of course, there are. But at the end of it, the bank are continuing with their opened up two new business branches in Liverpool and Manchester during the quarter. They highlighted that. That was one of the big things they highlighted across social media. They were very proud of that. So that continues. Now, part of the cost cutting may involve cutting some other branches out that maybe aren't so profitable. We don't know. But at the end of the day, they are focused on continuing doing what they're doing, and they're focused on cutting costs. Their Tier 1 capital ratio is very strong. And yes, they have the money in place. So financially, they are comfortable. But when you're in charge of a bank like this, or when you're a CEO and chairman, you've got to build that business. So that's the challenge they face, and that's why they're in the position they're in, and you and I are talking about it.
Yeah, all I'm saying is, right, there's the people who are invested, of course, are focusing on the hope. Just look, it's a risky situation. You know what's going to happen here. I don't think the FCA will let a bank go through, or, you know, whatever, but... people have rose-tinted spectacles. They're ignoring the figures and think saying this should happen, this could happen, this could happen. Don't think about what could happen. Think about the worst-case scenario, because, you know, that somewhere in between is what's going to happen, probably. Like I said, they're well-capitalised, but people just are going to think it's going to shoot up through the moon to £5. You don't know. The shorts could increase here. If you see a bad operational, in Q4, they could increase,
I think the one thing we agree on, just is that there is very little room for disappointment. You know, given what's happened, if they cut, if a statement's made to the market that is below par, or there are issues with the number of accounts open has fallen, there's an outflow of funds, all of that. You know, if we start to see that, then yes, I think at that point is the time to, you know, get out and sit on the sidelines and see what happens. But I think for now, you know, going on what's happening now, the share price has come down a long way, you know, from 40 quid last year to below £2, currently trading around
that
two.
That means nothing, though. I see people say that all the time. This share of price course. Was 40 quid, now it's 3 quid or 2 quid.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter, it can go to zero. It can go to zero. And the fact that it's fallen that far means there's a good chance it could go to zero, because there's something, you know, systematically wrong or systemically wrong with the business, you know? So,
yeah.
And then never look at what a previous share price has been and what it is now, because
look
at any company that's gone bust and the share price has been a lot higher a couple of years ago than it was now, you know?
Yeah, well. Well, look at Carillion. I mean, there's a great case in point, you know. Yeah. Look at Thomas Cook. Yeah, exactly. So, all of that. I'm mindful of both sides on this, but I think at the moment the facts are there and support a speculative investment. You know, it was a punt. I think up to the results came out, and up to Vernon Hill stepping down and the new board coming in. But I think the FCA investigation.
Again, you're saying think. All these are things. Thinks and hopes, and I think I expect.
But isn't that what we do here, Joss?
It's a speculation. Do you understand, though, that the business is deteriorating right now?
You have an opinion. I have an opinion.
No, that's not opinion. That's not opinion. What is in the RS is what they're saying. That's
the business
what,
is undergoing.
No, you hang on. Hang on a second. You've got an opinion on it. I'm talking about what's in the RNS.
Again, that's down to RNS interpretation.
It's not. I mean, hang on. Let me just read this out to you. Hang on. No.
Deposits grew by half a billion to 14.2 billion.
Listen. The outlook, which is you're looking in the future, yeah.
Without MREL, the minimum requirement for own funds and eligible liabilities.
The outlook. Yeah. Here's the outlook. Yeah. Okay. This is the outlook. Now, this is what's happening in the future. Okay. Margin trends experienced in Q3 2019 are expected to continue into Q4. The margin trend is going down. That's what it was. They, do you know what? Why they just do, there's obviously they won't say that, but the margin trend is getting weaker. So rather than say our margin's going down, right?
Well, we know the margin is being cut.
They're on 1.5% margin, interest margin. That's nothing. The interest margin is going down. They're also losing money now. They've lost money last quarter, where it was 34 million last year. That's a massive loss compared to last year. In addition to the cost of servicing the senior preferred debt, deposit growth will moderate. That doesn't mean grow, that'll mean slow down. They're using very polite euphemisms for saying the deposit growth, which has been their shining, you know, the sort of silver lining, that's going to get slower. The margins will go down, that's all you have to know, pretty much. So the amount of customers they're going to take on board are going to slow down, and the margins are getting worse. What does that say about business? That's all about the business, it's getting worse. That's not open to, that's not opinion, that's what they're saying.
That's what they're saying, but they all have a tier one capital ratio of 16.8%.
I don't care about the tier one capital. I don't care about that. They can't earn money off that.
Okay. Right. So as you say, the actual outcome will probably be somewhere in the middle. That's the underlying outcome of this. It'll be somewhere in the middle. Account growth may continue to fall. Margins may well continue to fall, but they're cutting costs as well. So if they're cutting costs to offset that, so they maintain their earnings and they maintain profit margins. Then that's a job well done. They've reacted and responded to a change in the market.
Cost cutting was about a million or 2 million. They lost, their cost increase was 50 million.
Of course. Yeah, of course, I know that. But the fact is that they've recognised. When you see difficulties in your market, you have to, as CEO, the board have to respond to that. So they're responding by cutting costs, and they will make changes in other areas too. So the next training update, we will see the actions of the company, more about the actions the company has taken to mitigate that. And yes, it's a work in progress. There's no doubt about it, but if management can be seen to be steadying the ship with growth continuing, or at least being or at least current levels being maintained, then you get a quarter like that under your belt, and I think the market will take a more sanguine view of the opportunity or the investment proposition that Metro Bank offers, and maybe then we'll see the shorts move away and look for something else. Who knows?
Exactly. Who knows? Maybe lots of maybes in there.
Yeah, you and I are speculating here, but it's two opinions, Justin, and two opinions make a market. So there you go.
That's it. Well, be careful. You can't control the market or the price, but you can control your exposure to it.
And be careful out there.
That's all I'm saying is, be careful. Don't wish. You know, a lot of people wishing this will go to £5 easily. You don't know that. You know, so position yourself accordingly, because it's quite a risky situation. That's not happening. Yep. I mean, it's not going to go through, but the business could deteriorate further, and that will not have a positive effect on the share price. And, you know,
agreed.
That's what I'm saying.
Yep.
So, okay. That's why I like stocks and shares. It's, you know, it is opinion largely, but try and include a bit of fact in there, yeah?
That's all I ever give you, just facts.
Yeah. The Alan Green fact. Okay. Marvellous. Cheers, Al. And we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Josh. Speak to you next week.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. At five, Bidstack Group. It was down today, but now it's up on that news. At 1.35% at 18.75 pence. At four, Independent Oil and Gas, down 6%. IOG ticker there to 19.25 pence. At three, Zoetic. Up 21%, 20.99 to 9.8 pence. At two, i3 Energy, up 50% today. And of course, Alan chatting about that. It's a good discovery there at the Serenity Field. And number one, most followed company. It's flying. Last few days, I mean, I think it's about four or five bagged. It's phenomenal rise. I had the guys on, of course, recently on the podcast. Eurasia Mining, up 48% today. 50% yesterday as well. At 2.64 pence. All right. Top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Argo Blockchain, new mining hardware installed and operational. At four, Integumin, launch of independent Rhino Drive AI open source ecosystem. So they're opening that up now. At three, Bidstack, appointment of Brian Nieder to advisory committee. At two, i3 Energy, Serenity Oil Discovery and corporate update. And number one is Europa Metals updated JORC resource. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchus appreciate.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.